Hey there, super fans, superstar Freddie D here. In this episode 115, we're joined by Corey Quinn, the growth strategist who transformed two hard-won startup lessons into the blueprint for deep specialization. The framework that rocketed his last agency from $20 million to $150 million in just 7 years. After cutting his teeth in the startup arena, Corey pivoted to agency sales and corporate marketing, mastering the power of vertical markets, customer-centric positioning, and inventive campaigns. Today, he mentors, consults, and coaches agency founders, delivering playbooks that drive focused, scalable growth. Get ready for an energetic dive into data-driven strategy, market focus, his new book, Anyone, Not Everyone, and the Art of Building Agencies That Thrive. Welcome, Corey, to the Business Superfans Podcast. How are you this afternoon, Corey?
Freddie, I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we were just talking before we started recording. You're next door. You're in California, and I'm in Arizona.
Yeah, so. It's nice. Last time I was in Arizona, it was beautiful, and I just love the desert. So I'm very fond of where you live over there.
Yeah, that's why I've been here for a few days.
Yeah.
And what's unique about this state is that different parts of the states are completely different.
Yeah.
So you can go to the Northeast and it's all forest. Mm. Most people don't realize that we call it the high country, but you go to high country, the east side, and it's all pine trees, and you would never think you're in Arizona because there's no desert.
That's not what I think of when I think of Arizona, for sure. That's wild.
Exactly. That's why I bring it up, is most people don't realize that. What's your backstory? I mean, you've got an interesting background. And so today, you're working with agencies with Corey Quinn, which is your own business.
Yeah.
But how did you get to where you are today?
Great question. So I'll give you the 10,000-foot overview. I graduated business school from USC here in Los Angeles. And it was back when commercial real estate was the thing that all of my classmates were getting into. I decided to get sort of back into the web. I had previously been an entrepreneur, raised a bunch of money in the dot-com days. But as I was graduating, I wanted to get back into the internet. And so I took a job as a business development representative, i.e. sales, at a digital agency selling PPC and SEO to large retail brands like Lululemon and Remax and Hyundai and the Men's Warehouse. These were all deals that I closed. And I love sales. I love the sales process. I was the top salesperson there for 19 consecutive quarters. Eventually made my way into sales management. Of course, that's the typical path. And then I became the chief marketing officer of a digital marketing agency called Scorpion. And if you're not familiar, Scorpion is, they do websites, PPC, SEO for local service businesses. At the time when I arrived in 2015, they were only primarily selling to attorneys, so law firms. And when I joined, the company was doing about $20 million in revenue. Over the next 7 years, we grew that to $150 million in revenue. We grew the company from 100 employees to 1,000 employees. And we grew the sales team from 6 people to 60.
That's incredible.
I know. It was a lot of fun, a lot of highs, and a lot of not nearly this gray as I am now when I started there. And I learned a lot. And, you know, many of the things that I picked up along that journey are in this book that I have since written since I've left the company. It's called Anyone, Not Everyone, The Proven System to Escape Founder-Led Sales. And I wrote it to help agencies primarily, but any service business certainly would benefit from this, helping them to functionally get out of the sales role through becoming what I call a deep specialist in a vertical market. And we could talk more about that, but that's the work I do now. I help agencies scale with that methodology.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I mean, it reminds me of when I got into the computer aided design, computer manufacturing space, we called it CAD-CAM.
Yeah.
You know, that was a ride too, transforming drafting people from drafting boards to 3D designs.
Yes.
So we had a blast back in those days and scaled companies. I started out as an applications guy, and then I moved into sales and became district manager, regional manager, Western regional manager,
eventually in charge
of global sales. Not as big numbers as you were doing, because this was a more of a niche market space, especially when I focused in manufacturing. But yeah, great story.
The interesting, when I joined in 2015, it was already an established business and the founder brought me in. I was an outsider. The company was basically all the local kids that lived around the founder. It was very much all the local high school kids all worked together, all knew each other, all grew up together. I was an outsider. I came in because they realized that they were successful by many definitions. The founder really wanted to get to the next level. They really wanted to impact more businesses. It was coming from a genuine place of wanting to help other companies. And they were struggling to figure this out. And so what I inherited was a 6-person sales team that was very well paid, that drove nice cars and got off at 2:30 or 3 o'clock every afternoon because we had this beautiful flow of inbound leads. Qualified inbound leads were just coming in. The phone would ring and then they would make money. It was a beautiful deal. The challenge was that the founder wanted to accelerate this growth. Like, we were good, but he wanted more. And so the challenge I had in charge of helping to grow the revenue for the company was, how do we accelerate growth beyond just the inbounds and the referrals we were getting? And so what we did is we did what most companies do when they want to grow faster than the inbounds are supporting them, which is, you want to guess, Freddie, what did we do?
Back to existing customers.
Existing customers. We did that a little bit, not as good as we could have. We probably should have read your book. But what we did was we started going outbound. And okay, we paid companies like Dun & Bradstreet and others a lot of money to get their lists. Back in the day, there was no Apollo or anything like that. It was, and you'd get an Excel spreadsheet with a couple thousand businesses. These were attorneys we were targeting. And of course, we started going through that list and
old-fashioned prospecting.
Old-fashioned, baby.
Fashioned prospecting.
And what you find is about half the leads in that list are dead or gone, you know, out of business, and you just don't know which half that is. So it was very, very laborious. And we did, as we were going through, of course, we would cold call. We'd try to get an appointment with the attorney. And if you're familiar with attorneys and other professional service firms, they have a gatekeeper.
Yeah, we call them gatekeepers.
And we couldn't get past the gatekeepers because their job was to stop us at the gate, not to let us through, type of thing. And so we struggled a long time. And you can imagine the sales floor that was once this amazing place to work where you had all this opportunity and money and all these things. And we had to go into that room and say, hey, guys, we need to start picking up the phone, start making dials, start doing outbound dials. And they were not happy with that. A lot of resistance went into that. And when they would do it, we weren't that successful. Like, if I don't know if you've ever done much cold calling, or anyone listening to this has done a lot of cold calling. It is a high activity, low yield tactic. And it's psychologically very tough over the long run. It's getting told no over and over again. Frankly, it sucks. And so we struggled for a while until we decided to send gourmet cookies ahead of the cold call. So what we did is, this was the founder came up with this. It was brilliant. We sent gourmet cookies before we ever picked up the phone and sent them cold to the prospect. And because they were amazing and it was very thoughtful and out of the blue, what happened was,
They would take the call.
The gift, the cookies would arrive and everyone in the office is standing around the receptionist desk saying, who brought the amazing cookies, right? And all of a sudden the name Scorpion, the agency I worked for, was bouncing off all the walls. By the time we would call to follow up, it went from the traditional, like, no, you know, please leave a message to,
oh, yeah, you guys,
you're the ones that sent the cookies. Hold on, let me put you through. Right.
Game changer.
Yeah, it changed. Go ahead.
Well, you reminded me a couple of things. One was cold calling prospecting years ago. We went and this regional manager, no, it wasn't regional, it was VP. And he flew everybody in. I was in Chicago at the time, and we went to Ohio, and we were all in the room, and we were all dialing, and I can't remember the sales guy's name, but every one of us was the same guy. Mm-hmm. We were cold calling for him, so I'll just say his name was John. So I would be saying, it's John, setting up appointments. You know, you'd be calling up and saying, you're John. You know, that other guy would be calling up and saying, they're John, and everybody had a list. And we all pretended to be John, and we got some appointments for John. We crushed it all day long. We had party, lunch, a fun blast. It was a fun day.
Yeah.
And that's how we made it fun, so it didn't get grinding.
Yeah.
Because, prospecting can get grinding.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing that you bring up, I did something different and I want to just share the story.
Please, of course.
I was selling into manufacturing space. And so what I would do is you guys sent cookies. I would send a letter, but I had an ace up my sleeve. And it was inviting them to a lunch and learn to understand how the technology was transforming manufacturing. So it wasn't positioned as, hey, look how wonderful our software is. It's no, hey, look, the market's changing. You need to become aware of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And we were in executive suites, and I would hire the gals and then have them contact the guys into the manufacturing space and invite them to lunch. Right. They would take the phone call.
Yeah, perfect. I love it. And so it was positioned so that they felt like, hey, I get to go have some free food, learn about something that's going on, and maybe I get to hang out with the lady who called me to.
Yeah.
Right?
Different approach, but similar tactics.
Exactly. And so we learned that this worked not just on a kind of experimental basis, but we figured out how to scale this over the long run. And so what we ended up doing at the end, that was the beginning state. The end state was we had these 60 salespeople. And every quarter, we worked with them to develop a target list for this, what I call gift-based outbound. And every quarter, 250 of their leads would get a gift. And guess what they would do the rest of the quarter? Follow up on the gifts.
Right.
And then rinse and repeat the next quarter. Yeah, exactly. It's a much better follow-up. Salespeople are much easier, much more willing to follow up on a gift versus a cold call. Trust me.
Well, remember the movie Wall Street? Charlie Sheen is sitting outside of the office, and finally, she gets him to see Gecko.
Yeah, you know, Gordon. Exactly.
Same approach.
The output of this is that we would sell 600 deals a quarter. Half of those were from outbound.
Wow.
This methodology. So 300 deals a quarter came from cookies and other gifts that we'd send. We'd have to send other things besides cookies. Although we were known in the space as the agency that sent the cookies. We would get calls from prospects who we didn't have on the list, and they'd say, you're sending everybody cookies but us. What's wrong with us? Why haven't you sent us any cookies?
That's funny.
Yeah. So we figured out how to scale the outbound and kind of operationalize that. Another thing that really helped us with our growth was taking a vertical market approach. And what that means is it's a specialization. So in a service-based business, you know, you could, whether it's accounting or marketing services or whatever, you can specialize in what you do, or you can specialize in who you do it for. So we only do accounting for the restoration industry, or we only do digital marketing for dentists. Alternatively, you could specialize in both. We only do TikTok videos for dentists, right? That's very, very specific. But what I found was at Scorpion, when I arrived, they were focused on attorneys. And that specialization, being an expert in that space, having a lot of credibility and client success stories, that's what drove all the inbounds that existed when I got there. We decided to not only go outbound, but we also decided to repeat that success in another vertical market, which is home services. You have plumbers, roofers, electricians. Mm-hmm. And so what we did, which I think was interesting, is that instead of just having the current sales team selling to attorneys also sell to plumbers, we actually hired a separate division in the company, different salespeople, different people on my team, on the marketing team, different account managers who only focused on, let's say, plumbers. And the benefit of that was that, in fact, I'm actually remembering the first sales guy we had used to have a plumbing business. And so when he would call the plumbers saying, you know, introduce
yourself. He could talk to talk
without even thinking about it. It was just natural language for him. And so all of a sudden the barriers or the resistance went down in these sales calls. Plumbers that he was talking to realized, hey, this guy knows exactly what I'm struggling with. He was right there and I could talk without any filter with this person. And so as a result of that, we learned really quickly that specialization, be able to talk shop and understand their world at a deep level, really helped us to remove friction from the sales process, accelerate sales, and grow that business.
Your whole message becomes specific. So I have a saying, to be terrific, you need to be specific. And if you're specific, you'll be terrific.
Yeah. We speak the same language.
Exactly.
Yeah. Effectively, what I do now is I help founders of agencies who want to scale, who are stuck in what I call the generalist trap. to become specific effectively, right? That's the name of the book is Anyone, Not Everyone, right? Comes from a David Allen quote from his book, Getting Things Done, which is you could do anything, but you can't do everything, right? You have to be specific.
I say to be terrific, you need to be specific. And if you're specific, you will be terrific.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, I came up with that going to like the BNI groups.
Yeah.
And I see people that says, oh, I'm looking for somebody that has skin. And you go, I can't think of everybody. It's too ambiguous. If they would have said, hey, I got a solution that works with people that got rosacea. Oh, and Lucille could utilize that.
Exactly. I'm going to have a Rolodex moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how is it that you work with agencies and share a story of how you've transformed somebody to where they became your super fan?
Sure.
And now they're your sales force. They're promoting you to people that they know. And there's no better marketing than having a sales team of all stakeholders promoting your business.
So the person that comes to mind is a couple examples, but the person who comes to mind, his name is Peter, and he is an agency founder, had been dabbling in this vertical specialization thing for a bit. When we met was he was specializing in radon, which is a very specific industry. It is home services. It's like this weird kind of gas that is prevalent in some parts of the country. And his focus for his agency was radon home service providers or businesses, as well as a couple others. And he was doing okay. But what I mean by okay was that his marketing was inconsistent. His messaging was inconsistent. It was very bland and broad, not specific and not terrific. And was frustrated because he felt like he was kind of doing what he should, but he wasn't really getting a lot of traction. What he really wanted was a predictable pipeline of growth. We worked together and analyzed who he's selling to. Instead of selling to radon companies as well as a couple others, he decided to go all in on radon. And we actually went through a process to understand what is the psychology or the how and why behind why radon companies hire an agency or maybe leave their old agency. We really codified that buying journey, if you will. We understood what the attributes are that cause someone to buy, what they're looking for. And we built a messaging framework that redid his whole website, redid his whole pitch decks, everything to clarify exactly the problems he solves, who he solves it for, so on and so forth. And then from there, very simply, we ran this gift-based outbound strategy that I just talked about, where he wasn't just waiting for his phone to ring or depending on Facebook ads, but he actually built a list of high-value prospects that were in the radon industry that had the problems that he knew he could solve, and he went out and sent cookies to them. Guess what happened? Grew his business.
He grew
his business, doubled his business. Very significant. And also gave him a roadmap that he could deploy against a secondary vertical market, which is pools and pool creation and servicing. But he implemented gift-based outbound and also something very important, which is events. Going and spending time at industry events and getting belly to belly with these folks. Right? How this is how business gets done is that we want to shake your hand, look in your eyes, especially for those agency founders who are listening, who many people that you're trying to serve have been burned, like it or not, at some level, and it's very hard for them to trust. So the best way to build trust is go meet that person and go spend some time with them, have an experience, get some cocktails even. That's a way
to build trust. Yeah, I used to do that in the CAD/CAM industry. We would have trade shows and people would come in to visit the trade shows and you talk with a couple of potential customers. I'd be in Germany, for example, at a 10-day long manufacturing trade show worldwide, but you got a chance to build some relationships. You got to know some other people from the industry. Same thing when I was selling home builder construction management software. I would go to the Home Builders Association here in Arizona and I'd meet the home builders themselves.
Yes.
Sometimes they'd be on panels and stuff like that. And you built up a discussion and you became not necessarily a friend, but more than acquaintance.
Yep.
Then you say, hey, let's get together and let's look at what you got going on.
Exactly.
Boom. You're in the conversation.
Yeah.
I got a question for you here,
please.
Corey, is when you sent the gifts, was it just a gift by itself with no message or nothing like that? Or was there a little bit of a message?
We learned the hard way you had to include a message.
That's what I was thinking.
and I give the gift a ride. They were like, oh, that was you. We didn't really know who these cookies were from. We just kind of, they arrived and they looked amazing. And even better is creating some context or some story around why you're sending the cookies. For example, Peter, who I'm talking about, wrote this really wonderful story about how his grandmother used to bake these amazing cookies and how it had a big impact on his life about being the best at doing something. And so that's what he has dedicated his life to. And so he wanted to share what it was like to get some amazing cookies, right? So it would put a smile on someone's face. It wasn't just a
sure.
quid pro quo, I'm sending you these, are you available to meet on Tuesday type of thing. It was much more of a relationship builder than anything else.
No, it's very clever because you're really connecting emotionally. That's where yes. it really was going at. I was thinking yes. of a couple places in or a couple ways, but really at the end of the day, you're making an emotional connection.
That's
and people buy emotionally and they justify logically.
That's right.
So you open up the door emotionally for those people because of the fact, one, they got a surprise. So that puts a smile on their face. Then they taste a high quality cookie. So they're even more excited. Now they're really going to take the time to read the information.
Yes.
And, you probably got some inbound calls as well out of that.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. The way I teach it is you don't rely on the inbound. You have to do the follow-up because chances are, the minute they're eating that cookie and they're in that beautiful moment where you want to talk to them, but then their phone rings or they get a text message from their wife or whatever that is.
Right.
And then they intend to follow up, but they never do. So you have to do the follow-up. It's critical.
Follow-up is everything. It really is the magic that transforms the opportunities because I have a saying that you've got a 15-minute window from an inbound lead that comes into through your website to respond. If you don't respond within 15 minutes, it's most likely gone.
Yeah, yeah. I have a fun story of the power of gifts. This was a little bit different. We didn't send cookies, but it was a Scorpion salesperson. He was focusing on enterprise-level companies, larger multi-location franchise businesses. And he had a target list of 100 franchise businesses that he was expected to prospect and close over a year. And there was one CEO who he was really dead set on trying to build a relationship with and try and get a meeting with. And despite whatever he did, calling, he couldn't get any traction, couldn't get an introduction. And so he's researching the CEO of this franchise brand. And it turns out that the CEO was interviewed in a magazine. In the magazine interview, the interviewer asked the CEO, what's your favorite all-time favorite quote? And she said, well, my favorite all-time best quote is something my dad would tell me. And it really made a big impact in my life. And the quote is, tell stories and be remarkable. Okay. What Justin did, the Scorpion salesperson, is the minute he read that, he's like, okay, I have an idea. He went to Etsy, found an amazing artist who had them embroider the quote from her father onto a pillow and then sent that to her. Of course, it landed on her desk. You open it up. That led to a phone call, which led to a relationship, which led to a $1.7 million deal for Scorpion.
There you go. It's a little old school. I mean, it's all old school, really, because
you don't need a computer. Emails and all that stuff. You just got to have a little bit of curiosity and intention to make that happen.
Yeah, I remember when I'd be selling, I'd go into somebody's office and start looking, and you can start talking about that thing. I used to drive a Mercedes, and everybody used to tell me that I'm never going to make any sales because people are going to say, oh, he's charging too much, too expensive, and all that stuff. I'm going, you guys don't get it. They're driving one. So
to buy from someone, you understand them, right?
Yeah, so I'd go in there, we'd be talking about cars, and the tech guys would be out there doing the tech stuff, and we'd be BSing about cars and, the BMW, Mercedes, this, what'd you have? Oh, I had that and stuff. It was fun. Those were good days.
Yeah. So they're not gone. You still do that stuff. Going back to the events, I'm a big believer in two things at events. Number one, getting on stages is still very important. Especially if you're at an industry conference where your buyer is. So in the case of Peter, he went to the Radon industry conferences, got on their stages, would educate and train people. And of course, people would come to his booth after and want to ask more questions. And that's how it was really helpful for him. The other piece, which is great at events, is to create your own event. I don't care if it's going to the hotel bar and throwing down a credit card and inviting people to come hang out, or hosting a separate private event. But it is an event where you create a memory. There's a great book called The Experience Economy by Joseph Pine. And it was all about the marketing and the commercial impact of creating experiences with your prospects. And the quote that I love that he said was, if you didn't create a memory, it was not an economically viable experience. And so when you're thinking about going to a conference and getting away from the computers and getting in front of your ICP, your buyer, in the real world, it's important not to just shake their hand, but also to invite them to some kind of amazing experience that would leave a memory. And I'll give you an example. In Vegas, of course, there's all these conferences, and we would go to this one conference called the International Franchise Association Conference. And it was always the one conference where all of our big buyers would be. And so what we did is we rented out the whole front row of the Britney Spears concert in Vegas, and we invited our best clients, our best prospects. That was something that I probably would have never done, but if someone gave me a ticket to that and said, let's go out to go get a steak dinner and go watch Britney Spears in the front row, I'd be like, I'm in, let's go, right?
Sure.
And that was the experience. That was the memory that we created, of course, when we came back from the conference. We didn't talk about business or whatever. We talked about how Britney Spears was staring at Steve the whole time, right? And just like having a great memory. So that's another thing to keep in mind as you're doing these type of events.
You know, what you're doing there is you're creating those memories are transforming into super fans.
Yes.
And those super fans talk about it. And that's the thing we want to tie that in is the fact that all the things you're talking about are things that in turn creates super fans. When you're sending the cookies, you're creating super fans from those, even though they're not customers yet.
No.
They're already super fans of you because of the approach that you utilized. So now the door's somewhat opened because of the fact that either they contacted you or when you make the phone call, they'll take the phone call because you've already got them to be a fan of your agency and you as an individual because your name is tied to what was sent.
Exactly. Now, talk about super fans. Peter has referred me a lot of business. And I literally last week sent him a gift as a thank you.
Yep. One of the things I did years ago, and I still do today, but there was no internet and any of that stuff, is especially when I was doing the manufacturing software, we would come in to a company and we would do a whole presentation of the technology. And they'd have everybody in, the owner, the VP of the IT guy. And then they would bring in the shop floor guys, the guys that would be actually utilizing the software. Okay. I made sure I got everybody's name. And then when I got back, I had a Mac at the time and I had written some templates and template letters.
Okay. Yeah.
And I would print them out. I'd say, Corey, thank you for your time. Jim, thank you for time. Everybody got a personalized letter mailed to them at the job site. So the guys in the shop floor that never get anything, all of a sudden they get a letter saying, hey, Corey, thank you so much for your time in the meeting last week. Your insight was valuable. We appreciate it. We look forward to working with you. My approach was also the sale was done and I was already talking in that letter of our next steps and how we can implement it.
I love it.
And what would happen is they would have a meeting and they'd decide on the vendor because it'd be two, three of us that were bidding for the projects. And I would always win most of the time. I'd say probably about 90% of the time. And when I ask is, why did you pick us? They says, well, we felt after the sale, you would provide the best support.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
But I had set that tone by the follow-up. And whether it's a gift, a letter, an email, text message, follow-up is really the goal.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you're in many ways, especially in the world that I live in and spend time in, which is the agency space, the buying experience for prospects is not great. Those agencies that have a really beautifully designed, crafted sales experience, they have a great follow-ups, thoughtful, intentional. That's a great way to stand out. That's a great way to communicate what you care about, which is ultimately the customer.
Right. But it goes beyond that because that's just a deal.
Right.
The real sale in my mind is everything that happens after the deal because
post-sale.
You can get the deal. But if the whole customer journey is not a pleasant one, you could have been the world's greatest sales guy and the best tactics and everything else, but it still falls apart because the back end, it to me, is actually sometimes more crucial than the front end because that's the whole experience.
That aligns with my feelings as well, Freddie. The most important metric in an agency type of business, which is monthly recurring, is lifetime value. Yep. And the reason why that played in our favor at Scorpion was our clients would stay with us for 36 months, 24 to 36 months, and pay us every month all the way through. Our competitors, their clients would stay with them 6 to 12 months. What that meant was that every client that stayed with us would stay with us twice, three times as long. And therefore, every client was worth more to us. So therefore, guess what we could do? Spend more to acquire them. Because we knew we could make the money. So we would send better cookies. We would go and do bigger events at the conferences because the economics would work out in the end.
Oh, absolutely. I still have people when I was doing some digital marketing stuff for a little while. I still have some customers that are, let's see, one of them is going on 15 years. I still do it part-time because it's easy work.
Yeah.
But we still do business and we're talking 15 years later. So what you're talking about, and I just bring that up to really emphasize that, it's the whole aspect of that whole experience afterwards.
Yes.
Is really the magic.
Yes. It's the business.
That's
how you actually make a viable business. Yeah.
Right. And those people, you know, they've referred me business over the years.
Yeah. It's great.
So it's important, that whole aspect. So I really like what you're doing with the deep specialization, because that's really, it goes back to be terrific. You need to be specific. And if you're specific, you'll be terrific.
That's right.
And that's what you're doing. You're helping people be specific.
Exactly.
So they can become terrific in the market that they want to be in.
That's right. The buyers care about whether or not you know their problem and how to solve it specifically.
Yeah. What is one of the things when I was on construction management software, it would be, where do they see themselves in a couple of years? That would be the conversation. How can I help them get there? This is just a tool. There's other construction management software. They do the job, otherwise they wouldn't be in business. So I differentiated myself, which is what you're doing and you're helping your clients do is, okay, let's get out of the widget conversation. Let's get out of talking to strategy and how can we help you get to where you want to get to? And now it's a whole different conversation and money really doesn't become part of the conversation till the very end. And it's not even part of the issue anymore.
Right.
Because
they're down the road. Yeah.
You're already down the road. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Corey, as we're kind of wrapping up towards the end here, how can people find you?
Well, Freddie, I'd love to offer your audience a free audiobook version of my book. They can download
it. That's very generous.
Yeah. They can download it from anyonenoteveryone.com. It's anyonenoteveryone.com. It includes the full audiobook. It's me narrating. So it's kind of like you get a little strategist in your pocket. And then it also comes with bonuses like videos, worksheets, templates, and so on and so forth. It's a very sort of how-to practical book. And so give you all the things you need to be successful to follow the five steps in the book.
Oh, that's terrific. We'll make sure that that's into the show notes.
Thank you.
That's very generous of you.
Thank you.
And that's going to help a lot of people because you've got a track record of really helping transform businesses. And I want to use the word transform because going to a $150 million company,
it's different.
It's a different ballgame.
For person company to 1,000, like we didn't have an HR department at 100. You have an HR department at 1,000 for sure.
Yeah, it's a completely different model. And now what you're doing is you're really helping that smaller agency scale. Yeah,
that's it. From experience.
So, Corey, it's been a pleasure having you on the Business Superfan podcast. Great conversation, great insights for our listeners.
Thanks.
I think you and I could probably speak on this stuff for several hours.
Yes, that's for sure. So,
I appreciate your time, and we look forward to continuing the conversation and having you on the show another day.
Wonderful. Thanks, Freddie.
Before we wrap, here's your quick debrief. Every conversation focuses on a single pillar of the Superfans framework, 9 road-tested steps that turn a spark of possibility into unstoppable, scalable prosperity. The 9 pillars. S, start, strategic positioning and purpose. U, unite stakeholder synergy. P, propel magnetic messaging. E, elevate every stakeholder experience. R, rally referrals and reputation. F, foster financial fitness. A, automate for exponential leverage. N, nurture lifetime loyalty. S, scale and sustain prosperity. Each episode concludes with a superfan's success spark, a practical guest-driven action distilled from today's conversation that you can implement within 24 hours. Follow the 9-episode cycle, apply every spark, and you'll build a proven playbook for turning stakeholders into loyal superfans, accelerating referrals, reputation, and revenue. So here's this episode's superfan's success spark. You unify stakeholder synergy. Insight. Every quarter, we built one target list, sent a gift to each contact, and a whole sales team spent the rest of the quarter simply following up. Corey Quinn. Action, 24 hours. Pull sales, marketing, and ops into a 15-minute huddle to pick your top 10 dream prospects. Decide one small surprise, as an example, a cookie box with a personal note, and assign who will follow up, then schedule the send-off. One action, one stakeholder, one superfan closer.